Welcome to the Name Your Layers podcast, a podcast where I, Alyssa, talk to fellow designers and chat all things branding and design. We'll cover their background and sometimes their non-linear path to becoming a designer. We'll talk tools, fonts, and all things around brand identity and pretty much life stuff as well. This podcast doesn't require a design degree. You don't have to have a favorite font, and you don't even have to be a designer to listen. Come for the conversation, but stay for the good vibes. Today on the podcast, we have Arva, and Arva's story is really incredible. She's someone that always wanted to be a designer and took 2020 as a challenge, or an opportunity, I should say, to become a designer, and her stories are amazing. She's an Upwork designer originally, so you gotta bet she's got stories about that, and we jump into that in this episode and more, and she's amazing. She was on a whole different time zone because she's not located in the U.S., but it was awesome. I enjoyed talking with her, and I think you're going to enjoy this one. I know I say that about every episode, but I mean it. All right, let's jump into this week's episode of Name Your Layers. Welcome to Name Your Layers. I'm super excited to talk to you. Just for context, we've never met in real life because you are in an entirely different country. We met on LinkedIn because that is the world we live in. That is 2021 for you. And I'm super excited to talk to you because I think you're awesome and I want the world to know who you are. So who are you? What kind of designer are you? And where did you get started? Have you always wanted to be a designer?
My name is Arva Lucky. I didn't always want to be a designer. I became a designer actually just a year ago, about a year ago. I started just by getting on Upwork, to be honest, and now I've found my way into UI UX design and a little bit of branding.
I freelance most of the time. Yeah, no, I love that. Upwork is a big, just for people that don't know, Upwork is a freelance platform. So if you need someone for, it doesn't have to be design, it could be writing, it could be anything really, but designers are usually the ones on it, at least how I interact with it. And I think that's really cool. I bet you have stories. So remind me to ask you about the stories. I'm sure you could tell some hot gossip what it's like to work with clients. That's awesome.
It's an experience. It's its own thing.
That could be a podcast like Name Your Layers After Dark, where we just talk about Upwork drama. I mean.
Yes, 100%. I feel like that would have like over 100 episodes.
That's so funny. But continue. So what made you pivot, you know, doing this?
So I was working as a virtual assistant before that. And all of a sudden last year, middle of the pandemic, I decided I can't do this anymore. I'm stuck at home anyway. And since I'm working remotely half my life, makes no sense to work for someone. So I decided to just get on Upwork and see where it goes. So initially I was still doing a little bit of personal assistance, which didn't work out. And all of a sudden on the fly, I was like, all right, how about just use your art somewhere? And then I was like, maybe I could put it on my Upwork profile. Let's see where it goes. The only category, however, they had available, which was barely suitable, was design. And I was like, all righty, then that's what we are today.
That's really cool. That's awesome. That's a very unique story. I'm here for it. That's cool.
And basically that's literally how I got where I got in a year. And I am still incomplete all off the last year.
Did it feel like a crash course? Cause you know, just jumping in and doing
yes,
it all.
Big that's cool. time. I mean, it has come with a whole lot of new aspects of anxiety that I never had in my life before. It's amazing. It's crazy. I mean, you get to learn so much. You have to do so much of like self-teaching and just going through 1,000 things to just get that solution right then and there because you do not have a formal education. So every day is just a learning process, and it's just insane to think that like within a year I did get so far, and I am so thankful for it, but I'm still completely in shock of it.
Yeah. Do you think if the pandemic hadn't had happened, you would have eventually found your way to design?
I like to believe I would have, but it would have been way down the line somewhere. Like I never thought of it like it would happen that soon. I guess the pandemic was definitely a big thing that played a big role in me becoming a designer, where I was like, since I'm working remote, what's the point of working with someone for someone else? And I think that's the mentality like I want to continue having as well in general. Even with my clients, I have that mentality. If I have too much of a struggle with a client, I don't want to work with them.
You're preaching to the choir. I think everybody can relate to that's listening. If your client's giving you a hard time, just run. Or listen to this podcast and feel like you're not alone.
Definitely. I mean, podcasts have helped me in the past, and they do help me every time. I do listen to this one podcast that's called Self-Control and Cheese. It's hilarious. It's so amazing. I found these people on LinkedIn.
That's so funny. So though I know them through Twitter. So I love that you've shouted them out. They're amazing. So I'll let you keep giving them praise, but I'm gonna have to message them after this because that's so cool. Cause I know that's so awesome. Have they been kind of your guiding light through all this?
Definitely. I mean, they're not necessarily designers, but they have insights in terms of what not to do when you're so young in the market and all by yourself. And they were that was literally the first podcast where I realized that it's not just me who's struggling with clients or navigating through things, who's almost alone, but I'm not. Like, they were the ones that made me realize that that's basically the journey of whoever starts wherever. I just had this epiphany that like I can't go on with clients just treating me like garbage. I didn't decide to leave my job to then come back to clients who treat me like bosses again.
That is like honestly the best takeaway. And whether you're a designer or a writer or any type of freelancer, or you work for just a company, understanding who you are and setting boundaries and like what you will and won't accept is huge. And I love that you found that, especially, you know, I can't imagine, not to bring it back to Upwork, the stuff you must go through and the way people must talk to you through there. I mean,
I am embarrassed for those people.
No, I believe it. I mean, I don't want to know like full specifics because I don't want to get like that bummed out. But no, I imagine it's very much like, it's not exactly like a direct parallel, but kind of how people treat like those that like DoorDash or Grubhub or like food delivery apps, or even like when we're out in the world and people, I don't know, people, for some reason people have this like weird reason, or I don't know why they do it, but they are really disrespectful to like wait staff. And I've noticed it's kind of a similar thing with creatives. With Upwork. Upwork especially. That's cool. I love that you give a shout out to Self-Control and Cheese. I'm, like I said, I'm going to message
them.
They are
amazing.
I'm going to tell Bridget that like, hey, we're going to have to do a crossover because we have a guest that loves both
pods.
Oh
my God. Yes. Yes. So cool. Well, I'm so down for it. They are, oh my God, they are so cool. Like, I love them both so much. They're amazing. Yeah.
That is so amazing. That's so cool. So, okay. So you decide to pivot. How did you kind of get your skill set going? Were you watching YouTube videos? Were you doing like lynda.com or courses? How did you kind of like, you know, sharpen your toolkit?
So initially I did have like from the get-go a little bit of idea with Photoshop because since I got into the university and I was already into art, Adobe has this thing where they give you a discount when you're in the university. So like I got it for like $20 or something and I was like, yay. So I kind of had an idea of what Adobe was, how to use it, how to navigate through Adobe stuff. So my whole idea of design was Adobe. When I thought of design, I was Adobe and that was it. So I guess in the beginning, it was always like YouTube videos or when somebody says a word, just research it right then and there. Like as they're throwing out words at me, I'm researching. And that was basically like every project. So for example, like when somebody said, send me a logo in SVG, I was like, what? What do you need from me?
You're like, wait, do you need my, you need my social security, my taxes? Like what
exactly.
Is an SVG?
That's
what it sounds like too. I think it's interesting. I know a similar story. So I was taught in print and I remember SVG, I kind of knew loosely of it, but I was so used to EPS and AI, which are different types of files, file types. So when someone asked for an SVG, I was like, similar thing. I was like, you want a what? And this is like early on in my career. So I'm proud to say I know what it is now and I can do it, but it pains me to convert stuff to it. But I remember they're like, yeah, I want an SVG. I was like, huh? Like, it just doesn't sound real. So I think that's funny that you said
exactly.
That. That's so cool. So then what, you probably like are picking up everything. And I love that you said Adobe, because there's some people, especially now, it's Adobe, it's Figma, it's Procreate. It's whatever,
it is,
it's sketchbooks.
But the thing is, when you're outside of the industry, when you haven't worked in it, you don't really know all these tools. For example, I have known Figma since forever. I've heard of it, but I literally got on it like last week and I am in love with Figma. Like, Adobe XD is in garbage for me now because Figma is so good. It's the best.
It really is. I think Figma, and I think I've said it almost every episode, but Figma has really lowered the barrier to entry because it's just so easy to use, and it's free, and it's browser-based.
It's free. Exactly.
It honestly is a better tool.
It doesn't overload my computer and crash every 5 minutes.
Yes. Oh my God. The amount of screenshots I probably have on my computer of just like Adobe doing that forced, or especially now with like the whole M1 chip thing with the MacBooks. No, I really, Adobe just doesn't play well with others or computers in general, but Figma, I really enjoy. I love that it came out. Do you think you're going to fully be a Figma user by the end of the year?
100%. 100%. Because it's just so, I mean, it's almost very similar to Adobe XD, but the fact that it doesn't crash constantly on me is the biggest plus point that I need in my life, because I am already so chaotic in general with like researching things on the fly and then having my application crash, and then I'm there like, oh my God, can everybody give me a break now?
That's so funny. You know, that happened to me last night. I was doing promo graphics for the podcast and I was like working in Photoshop, and I've had like Photoshop and I have been on the outs right now because I have a Mac with an M1 chip and Adobe products aren't working with it. Like, I had to do like a whole troubleshooting thing with their support team. It was a whole issue. But they put Photoshop beta on it, but it stopped working last night. And I was like, no, dear God, not now of all times. So I was like, you know what? I brought my stuff into Figma. And yeah, that's how I ended up doing the podcast artwork. I was like, okay, Adobe, you and I are on a break. And I'm going to be using Figma because it didn't crash on me.
Yeah, literally the same. I had to actually do it for a client who was like, hey, we're on Figma and like we're not willing to change and stuff. And I was like, all right, then that's how it's going to be. And I also love learning tools through new people or like clients when it kind of forces me to try new things and learn, because every time you learn a new tool, you learn a hell lot of more things with it. And that's the best part of it. So I'm always very happy to like take over whatever tools they're using. And yeah, I'm in love with Figma now.
That's so cool. What are your favorite feedback tools? I know Figma, you know, you can collaborate, but what do you like to do? Are you like an Asana person? Are you email? Are you a Google Doc? Like, how do you like to do feedback with people that aren't necessarily designers?
So the thing is, I'm not 100% sure how I like it, because I have clients who are so set up that they have their own systems, so I can't bring my system to them, or clients that are just starting to build a team, so they have no clue what's going on. And if I bring them on my tool, they are not willing to use it. They're just like, yeah, this is just crap to me. So it's like I'm on a bunch of tools at the same time. But I have been using ClickUp for it, I think, a few days now, and it's not half bad. It's quite good. It's intuitive. But I also suppose that since it's like a huge team who's working on the ClickUp app itself, like setting it up, that they just have it very refined.
Yeah, no, that's the case. I know people that really love ClickUp. There's like a ClickUp crew. There's an Asana fan. I like both. Similar to you, I'll adjust to whatever people are using, whatever the company's using. Because to your point, it's a great excuse to like get better at an app or to just try new stuff. I mean, most of the tools I know is because I joined companies or I had clients where they were using them, because you don't really have an excuse to use them outside of, you know, projects. So I think that's really awesome.
Exactly.
Do you think, so you said you pivoted into design. Do you think, you know, if you were to look back and talk to like the 13-year-old version of yourself, do you think they would be like, hey, I get what you do for a living, or, oh no, you sold out, or why are you a designer? Like, would they get what you, like the 13-year-old version of you, would they get it?
Never. The 13-year-old version of me would be like, are you shitting me? How did you get here? What happened? What's going on? I had a different direction in mind. What is wrong with you? Not necessarily wrong, but like, what?
I think 13-year-old Arvo is sassy, and I'm here for it. 13-year-old you was like, hey, what's going on?
We had other plans. Idea what anxiety meant.
What did you want to be when you were 13? What was your plan back then?
I think at some point I was going to be an astronaut, but then I realized that it's probably super tough to be one. So then I was like, huh, we're going to figure something out on the way. But in the meantime, we're just going to be something. I don't even know anymore.
Yeah, no, I mean, I like to ask people that because 13 is such like a pivotal age where you start to figure out like, and you understand careers and what you could do. So I think it's really interesting, especially because, you know, you got the preteen or the teenager that's like very like opinionated. So it's like, would they like what you do for a living? Would they be like, huh, that's cool, that's not cool. So I always like to ask that question. So you said Figma is your favorite tools. Do you have any other tools? Do you like to use certain apps on the iPad? Do you like to sketch in your like a Moleskine or a notebook? What's kind of your process for creating something new?
So I usually start, I mostly used to start in Adobe XD, like even for Illustrator stuff, illustrations and stuff, because I just feel like it kind of restricts the tools, and then you're just so bound to using just these squares and circles and so, such limited colors, and all the jazz is just not there. So it helps me kind of lay things out and like clear my vision on those boards. So I kind of use XD literally like a vision board. Like I love it because it extends infinitely, and it just gives me all the freedom I need.
So that's a good answer. I like that. Figma, I do Figma for vision boards now. I know some people like to use InVision or Pinterest, but I like the ability of just the big art board, and you can just kind of paste and you can see it as you're designing. I think that's really awesome. Are you someone that can draw on an iPad or like just draw in general, or do you have that like fine, I like to say fine motor skills. That's probably entirely wrong. I don't have that ability, so I'm always impressed when people do.
So you're going to be so impressed because I like paint and stuff.
I'm impressed. I can paint abstract, but people and stuff, like you, I always was like, as a kid, I wanted to be the person that would be like at the park and like drawing people. I'm not that person.
I still want to be that person, but I can't be that person for some reason.
So what do you like to paint? What's your preferred medium? Is it oil paints? Is it acrylic?
It's definitely oil paints. I love that it's like a super slow process and like mistakes are forgiven, which is always a gift. Yes, I love oil painting because it's like, it's just very tranquilizing.
That's awesome. I love that. So let's say you're working on a project, you're super excited, you're ready to kick off, or maybe you're stuck. What's your go-to for inspiration? Do you have a process? Is it sketching? Is it drinking coffee? Is it a certain playlist? Is it, I got to look at these like favorite books of mine. I got to go for a walk. What do you do to kind of, you know, get going to get inspired?
I think as soon as I have a project or something's coming up, I am so into it because I'm a generally very excitable person. So when you tell me the smallest thing, I'm super excited. So I'll just like sit and research everything about your company, the project, the person I'm working with. Like I would literally go all in. And then I start creating my vision boards. What do I like? What colors I think are going to work? What's not going to work? Just the general layouts. And then I procrastinate for like a really long time after that, because that was like my initial moment of motivation. And then I realized that I have to get to work now because the deadline's there.
I love that. I think that's really cool. Do you listen to music while you work? Are you more of a podcast listener? Are you listening to Self Control and Cheese while you're designing?
I do sometimes listen to Self Control and Cheese. But then when I have to super focus, then I switch to a very generic YouTube playlist, like called Chill Out Music or something. So I just type that in, whatever comes up first, that's what I'm listening to, because I tend to get super involved in the songs that I'm listening to or that I know. That kind of distracts me a little bit.
No, I think that's awesome. I know some everyone's different. Some people do music, some people do silence or podcasts. I think that's really awesome. What has been your favorite project that you've worked on so far? Is it been something, and it could be something for yourself or it could be, you know, for a client. And what was that like? What was the process?
So the most favorite thing I've worked on is my own website, which is like, it looks rough around the edges, but I loved working on it because it's so neon, so vibrant, so me. I just love it. I was inspired by this thing I drew like a while back. It was just a portrait of a girl, like super neon and stuff. And I was like, I could translate that into a website because at the time I was looking to do my own website. And yeah, that's basically what I did. And I love it so much. Like, I've gotten from people that it's a bit too much, like you should have toned it down a little bit, or like when the clients see it, they're not going to be so attracted because then they think, oh, you are this neon person in your work. But I love it so much, I can't change
No, I think it's
it.
cool. I like it. I really like the hero section. I assume before we met that that was you, that was your representation of you.
It is me,
That's
yeah.
cool. I like it. No, I like it. I think it's interesting. This happens to designers. I don't know if it happens to any other professionals, but they see our portfolio and they think that's all like to your point, oh, she must just
Yes.
design in neon or pop colors. But it's like, no, this is just kind of how I express myself. Like, purple is a color that I use in my headshot. I use it in my website. I really love purple, but I don't design in purple constantly. I just like that's like a color I vibe with at the moment. When you see people have very like sterile websites, I don't, at least maybe they don't mean to, but like they're not trying to like say like, hey, I only do like clean stuff like this. I think it's just like how we see ourselves, and then our work should do the talking, not our necessarily like the look and feel of our website.
Yeah, that's how I feel as well. I feel like my whole portfolio is on my website. So I don't think it should be a turn off as soon as you land on somebody's web page. You're like, oh, this is not my person. I feel like you should give them a chance I mean, you should at least give their portfolio a chance if you've come so far.
Yeah, I know. I totally agree with you. I think that's awesome. What was it like? So doing the website, did it take you? Were you like really agonizing over it or putting it off? Like, oh, it's for me, so I'm not really gonna make the time. Or was it something that you just kind of like cranked out in a night because the inspiration hit you?
Exactly. That's I literally sat through the whole night and I was like, I'm not getting up until this is done. Because since it was for me and nobody was gonna tell me that I can't do something because it's not their brand anymore. Yeah, I was so thrilled about doing it. I was very into it. I have to say, I was so into it.
Isn't that the fun part? I find any designer that I talk to, they tend to talk about it's really fun to do your own stuff, or to whether it's your portfolio, or if you decide to one night you're like, I'm gonna rebrand Pepsi, or I'm gonna rebrand my favorite brand of some sort, and you just do stuff in Photoshop or Figma, and you just kind of like get lost and a few hours have passed. Those are fun
Oh,
because
yeah.
they're for you. Like, you're not, like to your point, you're not trying to impress a client. There's no rules. And sometimes, at least in my case, I find that like I do something cool, I have it like something accidental. This happens to me all the time. I'll do something in Photoshop and accidentally like I'm on the wrong layer, but I'm like, oh wait, that looks
Yeah.
cool though. Maybe I'll use it for whatever it is I'm working on, but I always save it or like remember it as like a tip and trick for then a project down the road. And that's where like the fun stuff, like that's where you get to experiment. And then when you have like a very serious, or maybe not even a serious, but you have a project, you're like, oh, I can remember what I was like tinkering with that one night. I'm gonna try that because it works for this project.
It literally happened to me this morning, not even kidding. So I tried animation like a few days ago, and this morning somebody was like, hey, I need like a little hero section designed. And I was like, cool, whatever. And then I was like, maybe I can try an animation. And I literally did an animation today, last night, actually. I didn't sleep the whole night, I guess. And like you said, that's the best part of it, especially when I don't, since I don't have a formal education, it's so important for me to keep experimenting and trying out the tools and getting super comfortable with them, to just make the process in general easier for myself. So yeah, I love it. I love when I can just let everything go and redesign my portfolio for the 95th time.
No, it's funny that you say that. There's two sides of it. There's the designer that never touches their portfolio and they're like, oh, don't look at it. It's out of date or it's under construction. And then you got the other one that's like, I know I just updated it 2 weeks ago, but I'm going to update it again. that's the nature of it. I think it's really fun. I love that you're getting into animation. I was talking to someone yesterday for the podcast, and that was kind of where that's something they wanted to learn because they saw 3D being like the next trend. And he was like, yeah, I'm really interested in like, you know, teaching myself more about it. Just, you know, maybe he was like, it's kind of what you're saying. Maybe I'll do it for myself. Maybe it'll come up with a project, but I think that's where everything's going. And that's when you find all the cool stuff. It's when you're kind of tinkering. It's very much like anything else, whether it's like an athlete, like you practicing shooting 10 layups in your driveway is going to be the thing that helps you in the game. You mess it around in Figma or tinkering with 3D effects is going to be the thing that, like, when you're working on a project, it'll come in handy kind of thing.
Yeah. No, I definitely believe that, especially with experimentation. I'm like all about experimentation. The more you do it, the more you learn, the more... the easier it gets for you to kind of work for the clients after that, because you've kind of already ventured into that mm-hmm. Category.
I totally agree. Is there anything that you didn't put on your website yet that you were like, it's not quite done, or, you know, or you weren't happy with it because it wasn't ready? Is there anything that you are just didn't make the cut, but you think it has potential down the road?
I do think I have a website that I'm working on right now that I really want to put in my portfolio, and I keep putting it and pulling it back out because it's not done. And then sometimes I have this like, oh, but people are going to see how cool that it is, like how my process looks like. And then sometimes I pull it back where I'm like, yeah, people don't need to see half done shit. So it's always like yes and no, yes and no.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing every designer or creative person goes through, just afraid that people would think it's something and it's like, well, it's not ready yet. Are you one of those folks that prefers to make the thing versus publishing the thing? Or do you like both the journey and the, you know, the final result, I should say?
I think I do enjoy the process of publishing because it's so nerve-wracking and it's so exciting. To just go through that with every client where they are so stressed out and you have all the power. Just kidding. No, I love that process where it's like a go live and like you're all in super focused work mode. Since I don't have a job, I feel like that pressure is never there. And when it is there, it's such a nice build up to that point. I love it. It's super exciting.
That's really cool. I love that. So you talked about your favorite project. So what would be your dream project with your dream client? Who do you want to work with one day? And what would the project
be?
This is
so tangential. but I think I definitely want to at some point design a grocery store.
Tell me more. Okay. You mean like the branding or like the actual physical store?
No, the physical store. Okay. So I have recently realized that I do have a problem with the grocery stores instead of going grocery shopping. I hate grocery shopping. and the reason for it, and I realized because I design, is that it's overwhelming. It's so overwhelming. There is so much advertisement. As soon as you walk in the store, somebody wants to sell you something. There's red here, yellow here. It's extremely overwhelming, especially after a hard day at work when you're tired and exhausted and you just went in to get like even a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. You're coming out with a shit ton of chocolates or random stuff that you just mm-hmm. saw.
That's why they put the eggs and the milk in the back of the store, because they want you to buy the shit that exactly. you didn't come for. That's what they do it for.
Yeah,
keep going.
And I feel like the layout, as well as the fact that there is so much advertisement and that there is so much sensory overload, that it's just exhausting as a person to stand in a grocery store anymore. And especially the fact that I come from Pakistan, I'm not super used to the Western stores where everything is branded. So for me, shopping was like going to a store, grabbing a bag, putting a cup of rice in, bringing it back home. And now it's like there's five different kinds of rice and they all want to be sold to me.
No, that's a good point. So you're used to just going for the function. Like, I'm in, I came for this thing,
Exactly.
I got this thing, I left. I'm not here to have an experience or to get upsold. I just want some
No,
rice, I got some
exactly.
rice. Yeah. So what's your plan? What do you want to do with the grocery store?
I think I want to make everything brown bags, to be honest.
Okay. So everything is very, just everything's the same, and there's just like text on the packaging. So it's like,
well, it doesn't have to be text on the, I mean, yeah. More or less, yes, but like things are more brown, and then you can brand it a little bit, but not to the point where there is a huge yellow box of cornflakes staring in you in your face, and you're there like, I need to get that.
Yeah, no,
You know
I
what
get
I mean?
the I think it would be a fun challenge, because then companies would have to actually, and this isn't a knock, I'm not trying to like start anything, but like companies would really have to reapproach their marketing. It wouldn't
Exactly.
be bright colors. It wouldn't be sugar and cartoon characters on the packaging. It would be
Definitely.
nutrition. It would probably be, hopefully it's taste, because then it's going to be word of mouth. But I think that would really shake it up, and that'd be a really cool experience. There's a, oh God, I can't think of the name right now, but there's a company, and their whole thing is, it's like I think it's called Brandless, actually, now that I think about it. But essentially it's goods that you would buy, and it's all just no branding. It's just like simple colors and like text. So you're buying it for the quality. You're not buying it for the, you know, the bird, the colorful
marketing.
Bird, the marketing.
Right.
Yeah, essentially. I think that'd be really cool. What would you call your grocery store?
Brown bag. I think I'm going to call it brown bag.
I like it. Hey, no, it can work. I mean, I think that's awesome. That's a cool answer. I was not expecting that, but I like it.
I mean, in general, I feel like the more I design and the more I kind of learn about it, I feel like, and especially in a digital world, it's so overwhelming. I can't even find an app in my phone anymore, because everything looks so bright and so similar to one another that I can't decide if it's Facebook or LinkedIn. And it's exhausting to look at my phone anymore, because every application wants to talk to me personally, because they want to send me 20 notifications in a row for something that is not my priority right now, because I'm exhausted.
Yeah, what I think is cool, and I don't know if you've done it yet on your phone or if you have an iPhone, that you can do custom icons. So you can make it as minimalistic as you want, so you're not overwhelmed with the color or the, you know, every app looks the same kind of thing.
Oh, I actually should do that. I had it like a while back on my phone, like a really long time ago, but I never thought about it on my new phone. But that's actually a good pointer. I'm actually going to do that. But yeah, the general point was this, that it's just exhausting to look at your phone anymore. And that's basically with everyone, where I mean, I have a horrible relationship with social media in general, because of the fact that it's, you're not having it. So I actually read it, or I think I heard it somewhere in a video or something, that when you're nowadays, when you're not having a good day, everybody else is having a good day, and it's rubbed in your face so constantly, that you're tired on top of tired. And then, like, back when there was no social media, when you were exhausted or frustrated or anxious, nobody else for you was having a good day either. Like, nobody was coming to you at your place, ringing your bell and telling you, hey, I'm having a really fun time here. So I feel like, in general, I feel like this is a conversation we need to start in the design business. How can we be a little bit more ethical? How can we make marketing a bit more ethical, a bit more considerate about people being people, and people having problems, and people not feeling good on certain days, and how not to rub things in their face constantly.
Yeah, no, I think that's what's exciting about, well, the audio component of apps coming out, whether it's Twitter Spaces or Clubhouse. Also, I don't know if you've used it yet, Dispo, the app where you just take photos and then oh my God, blanking on the word. It develops the next morning. So you're like, aren't really like, you know, looking to do filters or like kind of get over, like overwhelmed with anything. You just take pictures and it develops like an instant camera, and you see them in the morning, and it has like kind of that like filter of an instant camera. The app is now out of beta and you can get in the app store, but it needs a lot of TLC, but there's not really like a social component. It's very much just like taking pictures in the moment, and then you leave and let it be. so much so that I forget about it, because you don't see the pictures as soon as you take them. You see that there's a little thing, you snap them, and then if you remember to look in the morning, you'll see them. But I love that. Yeah, and you're more present too, which I think is cool. And it's interesting for designers to figure out how to approach that versus like this in your face. Basically, so you're asking for the grocery store version of our phones.
I am asking for a grocery store version of everything, basically, because walking outside in general is just advertisement and it's exhausting. Especially, I realize that more and more during the pandemic, where it's like not everybody is having a great time right now, and they really don't want to know how expensive something is or how good of a deal they can get on something. And that's why even when I design for my clients, and I really hope that I get more clients who are willing to work with me on this, that I stated very clearly that, hey, I'm not going to do in-your-face designs. I'm not going to do these big, bold 20% off thingies. Like, I don't want to go into that because it's really, really annoying when it happens to me.
Yeah, I think it's funny because it's the opposite of what your website is. You're like, but I don't do that. I'm not my portfolio. No, I think that's awesome. I love the minimalistic approach. I think it's awesome when more brands start embracing it. And for me as a designer, I mean, I don't know if you're the same way. I buy things based on how they look. Sometimes they don't taste great, but I buy things, and sometimes, most of the time it doesn't work out, but I bought it and they got their money. So I don't think that I'm just not a returning customer. But no, I think that's really amazing that you want to do that. I could totally see that there is a need for that movement right now. And I mean,
why not?
Yeah.
Hey everybody, today's shout out goes to Coffee And. And full disclosure, Coffee And is something that is mine. This is the first shout out that is something that is owned by me, and I'm super stoked to share it with you. It's called Coffee And. It's apparel, black hoodie specifically, and each one has a message. So we have Coffee And Hoops, Coffee And Souls for the sneaker fans, Coffee And Equal Pay, which is something that's really important to me as a big advocate for women's sports and equality in sports and equality in everything. And I'm stoked to share it with you guys. So check it out at coffeeand.so. The link will be in the show notes, but yeah, definitely check it out. Let me know if you're into it. If you get a hoodie or something, send me a picture. And thanks for supporting. All right, let's get back to the show.
So I want to ask about Upwork, because I'm sure you could tell. So what advice do you have for someone who wants to hire a designer through Upwork? What are some tips on, like, first of all, how to position the post, and then how to treat the designer once you're like working with them?
So I feel like the most important thing is state your post very clearly. State what you need, state what position, what work they're going to have. Be a reasonable person and do not underprice it. Don't say, oh, send me a quote. We can't send you a quote because we have no idea what exactly you want. A quote only comes when we have a conversation. So be a decent person, put a decent price on it, and hopefully it's under the price. But even if it's over the price, don't hire the person, but don't try to negotiate to the point where the person says, I'm going to take $30 an hour, and you are like, oh, but can we do it for 10? Which happens constantly.
And I believe it. Yeah.
And it's just mentally exhausting because as a freelancer, I've realized you have to constantly be in the loop of applying for new jobs, which you don't have when you're working at a company. So you're constantly getting rejections. It's like being in this phase where you're applying for jobs, but like constantly, all the time. And that's why it's really tough to deal with clients that are very shrewd and rough. So just in general, be a person who is not underpaying people. Also, don't be racist. I couldn't put it better. Just don't be racist.
Well, don't be racist, period. Upwork or otherwise. Just don't be an asshole. Don't be racist.
Well, it doesn't happen to me. That's the funniest thing is Well, this might be really interesting for the podcast and for people to know what happens. So I come from Pakistan. I'm originally from Pakistan, but I never put that on Upwork. Whenever I apply to something, I literally state that I am from Germany. Like, I live in Germany. I don't say that I'm from Germany, but like to just put it out there. Because when they see that I'm a brown person, they're automatically assuming that I'm from Pakistan or India or whatever. And they don't want to work with me. However, I have to say this, that my friends that are in design business that are back home, they are so good at their jobs, but the people who are hiring have mostly this mentality that, oh, it's an Indian person, I don't want to work with them. I don't get it. It's annoying. It's something that they constantly say, oh yeah, I trust you more because you're in Germany. And I'm like, that is so messed up. You just not do that?
That's so unnecessary too. Like, you don't have to say that. I mean, you can't change the fact that they're thinking it, but it's like, you didn't have to say that. Oh, I'm sorry. I actually, you know, what's funny is I've always wondered, and maybe you have more insight on this, why Upwork even has the option. And this might sound stupid to anyone listening, but I've never really quite understood the option, except for maybe time zones, why they put like, I only want someone in the US or I want someone in Europe or whatever it is. Like, okay, so I understand the argument for time zones, but is that the only reason why? Or is it people thinking they can like nickel and dime and get like a cheaper person? Because that's not cool. Like, I'm not trying to, you know, diss Upwork. I'm not trying to start like a beef with them, but I've actually had really great success with people outside of the States. All the good like Upwork connections I've made, and one of them is like one of my favorite freelance designers. Him and I met through Upwork. He's in Malaysia, and he's awesome. Like, he, and time zones don't even matter. Like, he's, poor guy, I don't think he sleeps, but he's always available, and he's just good, and he's quick, and he's so easy to work with. And I can't say the same for the folks I've worked with in the States. That's just, it is what it is.
Yeah, that's so true. I had two clients from States, in fact, and they weren't my best clients, I have to say. All my other clients so far that have been, I mean, I've mostly have had people from the Europe area, because in general, I work with German clients. But I do know that this whole conversation about countries is so unnecessary, especially if you're hiring a person remotely.
That's been the beautiful part of the pandemic, has been this barrier to entry that's kind of been shattered. You don't have to sit in Silicon Valley anymore. You don't have to sit in New York. I mean, talent is really everywhere. It doesn't really matter as long as you have a Wi-Fi signal. And I think that's personally what excites me about the future, is that you can find an amazing designer. Like I said, he's probably the best I've worked with on a personal level, and he's in Malaysia. And that doesn't matter, because he's good. Like, and I probably wouldn't have found him otherwise. So I think that's
exactly
really cool.
Yeah.
That is happening that way. Well, I'm curious, since you work with primarily, you know, German clients, that design style is very specific. Have you found that or is it not specific? I'm just going off of what I learned in school, especially with the German, you know, influence. Is it very specific and very clean, or do they kind of follow the trends of like, you know, New York or San Francisco and stuff like that?
So this is so funny, because I feel like the States is super obsessed with Europe, and Europe is super obsessed with the States. So it's always like, when you're working with German clients, you're like, oh my God, I can like totally bring in the whole art house movement into this. And then they're like, can we do it very American, so that all the American people want to buy our stuff? And I'm like, all right,
so then. So funny, Bauhaus is my favorite movement, or at least top three. I really loved learning about it. My favorite class in college was Survey of Western Art. I still have like the textbook, because it's amazing. So I think that's really funny that you guys are trying to be like us and we're trying to be like you.
Exactly.
It's so cliche too. Like, of just like, we're just not happy being ourselves. We're just trying to impress the other one.
Absolutely not.
Do you ever, like, when they suggest one way or another, are you good at suggesting like, well, actually, maybe let's try this route? Do you even like doing that? Or do you just go, all right, cool, let's do it that way?
I'm very opinionated. I am so opinionated. It's annoying to my clients sometimes, where they're like, can you just do it the way I'm saying? And I'm like, no, can we just argue about it for 2 hours, please?
Do you usually get your way? Like, are you able to prove it to them with like facts, or not facts, but because it's design, but like, are you able to prove it to them with samples, or are they just like, are you just going off of like gut feeling?
Well, sometimes I am going off of my gut feeling. Other times it's like, it's just basic thinking, like, can you just think through it? I know that you like something, but liking something is not the way to design something. And you know that probably too, that design and personal preference are two completely different things. It's not mm-hmm. an art project, and clients forget that constantly, that this is not your art project. I forgot that in the beginning as well, where I was like, oh, I'm in an artistic profession. But now I realize that, and I make that distinction very clear to myself. In fact, I was telling somebody the other day who was asking me, so did your clients like your designs? And I was like, I don't care if they didn't like my designs, as long as they accepted it and they're cool with it, or they need alterations, whatever. I don't think about if they like my design or my work personally, because it just exhausts me. It just adds another layer of emotion for me. And I do work with a lot of emotion. Like when I'm designing something, I really design how I would do it for myself. But then I take out that emotion as soon as I submit it for review, because I feel like this wasn't an art project again. So yeah, that's why I just feel like clients forget that. And that it's just tough to explain them why something's not working sometimes, because I can't even put it in words, but you probably get it.
No, I get it. Because sometimes, and this is something I learned in college, what I really liked, because it also kind of taught me how to kind of coach clients or people that aren't necessarily designers, like how mm-hmm. to coach them on how to give feedback or how to ask what they want. Because, and I'm sure you've had it, right? You get the client that goes, I don't know, I just don't like it. And that's all they say.
Yeah.
I just don't like it. And you're like, okay. And you could get mad, you could get angry, you could take it personal, but that doesn't get you anywhere. So you have to, and what I loved about, I had a teacher especially who taught me this, like questions to ask about like what it is, like to get them past the, I don't like it. It's like, okay, does it remind you of something? Is it the font? Is it the color? And sometimes it's just as like, you can get down to it. It's almost like a therapy session where they're like, oh, it reminds me of like, no, this literally happened to me one time. And I don't know if I've said this on the podcast already, but someone told me, it reminded them of a company they didn't get a job. Like they didn't get the job. And they're like, yeah. And it wasn't like I was badgering them. I was just you know, like I was just asking questions, right? Like a design detective was like, oh, is it this? Like, you know, trying to figure out what I could do for the next round. And finally they're like, you know what? Honestly, it reminds me of a sauna, and I didn't get the job with them. And I was like, oh.
This is hilarious.
I was like, okay.
Oh my God.
Okay. And that's like, right. It's human nature. We're all triggered by our own stuff. So sometimes that happens. So like if someone's critiquing your work, it's never personal. You're probably bringing up old shit for them, or it reminds them of a company they didn't get hired from, or whatever it is. But I think that's funny. So I love asking questions, because I can't do anything with, I don't know, I don't like it. I just don't like
me
it.
Me neither. I'm like, no.
Yeah. And sometimes what I like to do, depending on the project, and I don't know if you're the same way, I've learned over the years, instead of like spinning my gears to try to give them what they want, even though in my heart I know it's wrong for whatever reason, or it doesn't match, or and well, you know, what they're picturing in their head won't exactly work for the medium because they're doing it on print, it makes more sense on video, whatever it is. Or especially if you're doing like web projects, people's kind of, they think what's possible in print is possible in web, and that's not the case. So sometimes what I like to do, and maybe you do this too, I do their version or as best I can what they're asking for. I do one that like is way off like the left field, and then I do that's one that's like a happy medium. So then they can kind of see, it's almost like A/B testing right in front of them, or like I call it like the a la carte special. And sometimes they pick, you know, they pick the one they wanted. They're like, that's what I wanted. Or they pick the left one, or they pick the hybrid, but it kind of shows them like, oh, there are options, without being like, you know, hey, your idea is stupid. It just makes it more approachable that way.
No, that's actually very smart. That is so smart. I think I need to start applying that like to myself as well, because I tend to get really aggravated. That's what I meant earlier, that like when I do put a lot of emotion in it, then I get super aggravated when they are not on the same page with me. And I don't mind my designs getting critiqued, but when I'm trying to come from experience and tell you that, hey, like this is not going to work the way you want it to work, and it's not going to come out looking how you want it to look, I get so frustrated that I am literally sometimes at the point of like do you want to work with me or not? I just go grab myself a coffee and then come back and touch those things again. But no, I think I need to start doing that as well, because that just sounds smarter. This is cool. We should talk more.
Oh, gladly. And don't get me wrong, I've been like the, oh my goodness, the things I did in my early 20s too. I don't have any clients from my early 20s, and not because that was a nightmare, but because I just did things the wrong way. I didn't nurture the relationship. I was too self-involved. I treated it like it was like I was the client. I learned all my lessons the hard way, and especially owning your own business, you're just like, ugh. But I will say the thing that's really helped me is like, yeah, not taking it personal, giving them like a different options, and really trying to like definitely always give them what they're asking for, or at least the best of your ability, because sometimes it's hard to like get what's in their head, or even if you know it's wrong, like this usually happens where they're so caught up in like the competition of whoever their competitors are, and like we want it to look like their website, or we want it to look like their packaging.
That happens so often.
And it's so common, because it's like they don't know what they don't know. Like they're like, well, we see it working for our competitors, it'll work for us. And it's like, that's not quite how it works. It's working for them because they did the work, they did the research, they know it makes sense for their audience. Like, you don't want to copy. Yeah. Plus consumers, we can see through that shit. Like we know when you're not being authentic. So a lot of the time, like I can't tell you how many times I've gotten a link and they're like, copy this, but change it to our colors. And I'm like, okay. And I'll do like a quick mock-up. I used to be a big Adobe XD user too. Or then I would be like, what if we did something like wild and crazy? And I like, will do them something that's like not corporate, because what they sent me was like a really corporate like stock photo
example. Right.
And I went, like one time I went real left field. I did like an illustrative one. I was like, what if? And then we ended up doing like a hybrid where it was like a little bit of both. And but it's like they don't know what they can't see. So if you just tell them like, oh, I think that's a terrible idea, you should do this instead, people are going to get defensive, because that's just what humans do. Like we're just, if you tell us our idea is bad, we're like, no. And then we get like, we're like 10 years old on the playground. Like, no, you're dumb. And it's just that it is what it is. But I find if you like just show them, you tend to get a little bit further. Sometimes
I've had clients that. Regarding that then.
Okay. What's your question?
I don't know if you work by the hour or by project, but in case you do work by the hour, when you're doing all these testing, do you charge them? Do you not charge them? Do you keep it on the side? So in case they pick that version, do you put that on the bill? How do you navigate through that?
No, that's a great question. The hourly versus project thing is something I'm still figuring out to this day, because I work really fast and almost hourly, it sucks for me. But recently someone told me that whatever your thing is, whether you're really fast, you're quick at this, whatever your like secret sauce is, it took you years or however long to get to that point. Like you didn't just like get it overnight. So that's what people are paying for. They're not really like, if you really boil it down, they're paying for what, an EPS file, a zip file of icons, whatever the project is. But it took you, you know, that those nights of like, I'm on YouTube, I'm in class, or whatever your medium was of how you learned. That's the work you put into it. And that's what people are paying for. So whether it's hourly or project, that's like really up to the person. But to answer your question, I try to do stuff at the same time. Because I work quickly, I will give them their version. And sometimes I even start with my take on it, like my version, because I need to get it out of my system. And then I'm like, ooh, wait, okay, hold on. I need to go back to what they're asking. And I just do it like a comp. So I call them comps. I don't know if you call them comps or drafts. I do it that way. So I try to give them like their thing. And it's funny when I'm working, his name's Mash, he's the guy I mentioned in Malaysia. He does a similar thing where I'll give him like a brief, like send him bullet points of what I'm looking for. And then I always tell him like, hey, do one for you. Like, and he's like, really? And I know not everybody's like this, but I approach it this way because I've been in his shoes. I'm like, yeah, like charge me for the hour or whatever it is it takes you to do it. Do one for you. I want to see. And most of the time I pick his because he
like, love that.
That's honestly like, I think I would, if I ever had my own company or my own agency again, I would do that, because people also don't like to be put in a box. So if you let the designer kind of do one for them, it's kind of like if you're watching a band and you just like, you know, you can tell when the drummer's like sick of playing the same song over and over again, but they get that like intermission where they're just like, they get to try like a new drum fill or something. And you're like, yeah, like that's essentially what you're doing for a designer. So that's actually my advice. If you're working for a designer, let them do one for them. And yeah, okay, if you don't want to pay for it, like, don't be that person. Like, you should be paying them, and I think you'll be pretty excited to see what they come up with. And sometimes you don't even use it, but like whatever they did that was for them, they might be like, hey, I actually have an idea on how to make the other thing better. So that's how I approach it. Sometimes though, I've had the instance where I'm like, they only are going to pay me for 2 hours. I did it in 2 hours, but I really think I can do like something cool that they might like, and I might just do it really fast. Like I won't do it like, I won't complete it. I'll do like a good version where it's good enough, and then I'll present it and be like, hey, by the way, I just kind of had this. And sometimes they like that. They're like, oh, you know, they put the initiative in, or like they really care. Some don't and they take advantage, but those people suck anyway. Can't do anything about that.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to work with them long term anyway.
Yeah, so you might as well just be like, peace, I'm out. But if you can kind of show them like a good enough version, be like, hey, I know these are what you asked for, but I was thinking this based on what you were saying. And also it goes to, and my favorite book of all time is called Nonviolent Communication. It's a book on how to communicate with people. I recommend it to everybody. It's awesome for relationships, for business, for whatever, just humans, like talking to someone at the coffee shop. Like it's an awesome book. It's all about observing versus judging. So, and it's how you position things to people. So with that, you could also be like, hey, what I heard was like, so I did what you asked, right? You can word it that way. And then you can say, so I did what you asked, but then like, I was kind of doing more research, and based on what you're saying, what you're asking, I think this could work too. And, you know, show him like the one you believe in. And then first of all, they're going to be like, oh my God, like you heard me, you get my vision. Yes, that's what I want. Cause at the end of the day, everyone just wants to be heard and validated and seen. And that's just, that's what it is. So that's what I've learned. And again, that's like my favorite book. So I always recommend people read it.
What is it called again?
Oh, I know, I talk fast. I get excited when I talk about the book too. It's called, I'll put it in the show notes, but it's called Nonviolent Communication. And it's by Marshall Rosenberg. I want to say he's no longer with us. It's an older book, but it's still super relevant and it'll change your life. And I love that book because I kind of came across it in a way that you don't really like hear about books anymore. I was at a bookstore pre-pandemic and I was looking at like, it's kind of in the self-help section, and I'm looking at books. And I'm, you know, looking, I'm just kind of talking to myself. And this woman, like, she was like, came out of the heavens. And she goes, you should read that book. And she points to me and I was like, I'm okay. Like, my relationship's fine, right? Because the title's kind of like misleading. And she's like, oh, no. Like, if you're married, not married, like, that's cool. Like, it'll help you. But she's like, this book has changed my life with work, with relationships, with anybody I communicate with. And I was like, okay. She's like, get the book. And she must have been like easily 10 years older than me at the time. And I was like, okay, I'll get it. Like, and so I grab it. She's like, she kind of gave me like a look, and it was like a movie moment where she's like, get the book. And I was like, okay, guardian angel, I will get the book. And I got the book and I read it at least once a year. Everybody I talk to, I recommend it. Cause it's like also just kind of good to stay fresh. Cause I'll catch myself like falling out of the habit of
looking
it.
Sometimes.
Yeah. Or I tweet about it all the time, but I think it's just a cool book. And I think it's helped me too with like my kids and just in general. And it'll help you like not only like communicate with people, but it also kind of helps you realize like what someone's saying.
What your flaws are.
Oh, no, not your flaws. Don't worry. There's other books that can teach you what your flaws are. But it also kind of shows you that like you'll start to hear how other people talk. You'll start to hear things and you're like, oh, they said this. Cause once you read the book, you're like, they said that, but they meant that. And it's like, when someone's like, you made me feel bad. And that's like an example of the book. It's like, you made me feel bad. And you're like, well, actually I can't make you feel like you're thinking, and you're like, I can't make you feel bad. What I did caused you to feel a certain way. But, and it's kind of starts to help you. And cause they break down in the book, and this is like probably going to get cut from the podcast, but just, it's really fascinating because, and the book explains that when someone says, like, and that's how a lot of conflict starts, is like, you made me feel bad. And it's like, I didn't make you feel anything. And then people start getting upset. And he has an example where he talks to like gang members. He goes and like intervenes with like really tough like gang members in rough parts of the country. And it's just like how many things could be avoided if people just said what they meant versus like we're conditioned to be like, you did this to me. And it's like, we technically are like born to speak in like a very aggressive way, at least in the States, and the book just kind of like blows it all up. So I digress, but that book will be, you'll enjoy it, I think.
No, I'll definitely get a copy for myself actually right now.
Yeah, it's a pretty good read. It's one of those, like you'll stop and like, you don't have to read it in one sitting, but you're just like, oh, this is like interesting. Just like, you know, start to observe how people talk, and I love it. It's, I wish the title wasn't as like, whoa, that's intense, but yeah, I don't
know. No, I feel like the title as well as the cover is like not that enticing, mm-hmm. but I'm always down for recommendations. That's how I basically do anything.
That's awesome. That's cool. No, I mean, don't mind my book digression, but what's a rebrand you would want to work on? You know, whatever brand exists today that they were calling you tomorrow and like, hey, Arva, we want you to rebrand our whole identity. Who would that be?
It's so funny. I was really thinking about it and I wanted to really, really work with Tiffany & Co. because it's the opposite of me as a person. And I would love to see where that would go. It's That's so cool. delicate and beautiful. And I'm like, rock and roll, kill everybody. So I would really love to see how that would go.
Cool. I love that. That's like not an answer I'd expect. Or even most people would be like, oh, I like, you know, I like me, I love music and I want to work for her music, whatever. Like you went like the opposite, which I think is cool. That's when like the good design comes, when, you know, collaborations happen and you're like, oh, that's so unexpected, but it's like a new perspective on the brand.
So I feel too, because I always love these collaborations where you don't expect something. For example, I was to Behance the other day and I came across, don't even know what kind of an art that is. It's like a dress with photography, but it was really cool. Anyway, it was done for Zendesk. I was like surprised. I was like, why is this there? But it's so cool. And I think eventually that's the direction I want to go in. I want to do collaborations with people where I can like bring my artistic side out, but still kind of understand like the brand logic and how to kind of merge everything together.
I can see that. And that was going to be a question I asked you as far as inspiration. Are you more of a Behance gal or a Dribbble gal?
Oh, I haven't tried Dribbble, but I've heard this from a lot of people that Behance was copied off of Dribbble. So not sure, but yeah, I usually use Behance, or I basically just type a keyword in and then search Google Images mm-hmm. basically most of the time. But I love Behance. I love it because I feel like on other platforms, and not saying Dribbble, but like on general social media and Pinterest, it's so much random information, and on Behance it's so specific, and like you find actual real ideas and real works of people, which I always find nice. And it's also more personal because then you can go into their profile and stuff and see more work from them. So I love it. I in general love these like portals where you can kind of find more creative people, and specifically only creative people.
Yeah, that's true. I like both of them for different reasons, and I've talked about them before on the pod. I always like to tell people that aren't necessarily designers to look at Dribbble because you can search by color. And you can put like in a keyword. Oh. So people that aren't like, they don't know, like, cause you know, Behance's thing, which is my favorite part as a designer, is I can search by software that was used. So if I'm looking at like, if I know I'm going to use InDesign, like I want to obviously see InDesign samples. I don't want to see something that was probably made in Photoshop because that doesn't translate, even though it looks really cool. Like I need something that like I could like, that makes sense. So, but I always like, and the non-designer usually is like not searching the same way. So what I like about Dribbble is I'm like, yeah, go, you know, search by color, type in your keyword, and then you're off. And people are like, they love it. Like if someone, especially because I used to work a lot with bands and like streetwear companies, like clothing companies. They love to say like, I want to look, be like X whoever or whatever competitor. I'm like, that's awesome. You should also go on Dribbble. Your color palette is this. Type in the keywords of like what your vibe is. You can even type it clothing line. But if you're like, oh, we're very rustic, or we're very like industrial, or wherever, whatever they identify as, like type those in and you might get inspired, or you might find it. Like I had one time a client, they found like a beer logo, and they were not a beer company. They were a streetwear company. Like they were trying to like target like males 18 to 24 who kind of like, who were kind of into sneakers, you know, into cars, whatever. But they had like one vision for their brand, and then they saw this really cool beer logo, and they're like, oh, like that's what I gotta go with. And then it kind of inspired them. So that's what I like about Dribbble, because it's a little bit, it's more visual, whereas Behance, you get the story and the, you know, the background.
Yeah. No, I love the fact that you said that you actually give them source to look into, because I've never thought about it. And every time somebody or a client, or I'm in this loop of what do we like or we don't like this, I've never thought that I should actually tell them exactly where to look, because Google can be so overwhelming and like you barely ever find something if you don't know what you're looking for. But I'll definitely try that.
Yeah, and I find it's a little bit, I've done it at the beginning of a project. I've done it in the middle when we're kind of stuck. Just like, hey, and it's not like an intimidating thing. They're just like, hey, click here, go search by color, type in the keywords you're looking for. And then they start to play. And then, you know, to your point, they find a designer and they're like, oh, I really like this person's like aesthetic. I really like, they, and sometimes they change their mind. They're like, I really want it to look like this. And you're like, oh, cool. You found inspiration from like a startup landing page, but we're doing a merch design or whatever. So I think it's really cool. And then they're able to kind of realize, and then they can make their collections and they make their mood board. And that's why I'm like, I'm pro Dribbble, pro Behance, depending on the situation. Also, I'm pro Pinterest. Pinterest is also a very, like, you don't have to go to get another website. If you're not like a designer person, you could just use Pinterest and go from there.
It's so hard for me to navigate Pinterest, maybe just because I've never used it, but I never get the hang of it.
Yeah, it's an interesting UI. I could do a podcast on their user interface because it's like, huh, but it's working. It's, people are on it. They're addicted to it. So
That's so interesting to know that people are like, they live for it. And like, I don't understand it 100%, but cool.
Yeah, no, I think that's really awesome. So there's a question I like to ask everybody on the podcast, and it's two approaches to the question. So let's say you're talking to a young person and they really want to get into design. They want to do what you do. You know, they saw your stuff and they're like, Arva, I want to do what you do. What advice do you have for that person? And then the second person is someone like you who was doing something else and they pivoted into design, or they want to pivot. What advice would you give that person? Or is it the same advice?
So for the younger person, I would definitely say start experimenting. Start experimenting right now. There are enough free tools available everywhere. The sooner you start, the sooner you will find where you want to go eventually. Because a lot of people, and I've heard this from podcasts, from people's stories, that they started as a designer, ended up doing something completely different, which eventually was also super cool. But the sooner you start doing something, the sooner you find your niche or what you love, actually. So start right now. I also tell that to people who procrastinate a lot, like myself. Don't wait until the full hour. Don't wait until a Monday. Don't wait until the beginning of the month. Start right now, because it's, you don't know what happens on that particular day or time. So this is your best shot, starting it literally the moment you thought about it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. What about someone that wants to go on Upwork? What advice do you have for someone who's like, you know what, I want to make some extra money and I've heard good things. What would be your advice for that person?
Don't get offended by people not replying to your proposals. Don't take it personally all the time. It's not because your work sucks. It's just that the market is oversaturated, and it is oversaturated. But you'll find enough people who will resonate with you, who will like your work, who will be more than happy to work with you, who will pay your price. So until then, do whatever you can to, I mean, if you're over the line with your money, you're good. Don't work for people that you don't want to work with. If you're struggling, just make sure that you don't get too hurt, like just by clients to whom your work is not worth the money. So yeah, don't waste your time on people you wouldn't work with long term.
That's great advice. I love that. That's I don't know another way to end the podcast. I think that's amazing. I think we're gonna have to talk offline about how we can make like an Upwork After Dark or Name Your Layers After Dark, and just talk about like all the freelance stories, because I know you probably have me beat with Upwork alone.
that is going to be, oh my god, I have a huge scam to unwrap.
It's amazing.
But I think I just want to shout out this amazing podcast that I listen to. It's called Let's Talk About Myths, Baby. It's on Spotify, and anybody who is like, I mean, you don't even have to be interested in mythology, but I found this like 2 days ago and I've heard like all of the episodes almost. So just go and listen to it. It's so funny, so amazing. It's all about mythology. It's literally going to like change your life because it's going to make you more, so much better every day.
That's cool. Is that what you listen to kind of like while you're working?
Not necessarily. I think it's something I more listen to when I'm painting. But yeah, I mean, everybody should listen to it because it's really funny and it's really like a bright thing to listen to.
That's awesome. That's cool. Well, before we go, can you tell people where they can find you, portfolio, website to work with you, Twitter, Instagram? Where can people keep up with you?
They can always keep up with me or find me on LinkedIn, where I'm Arwa Lucky, ARWA, and then Lucky. You can find me on my website, which is arwalucky.design. On Instagram, it's also arwalucky.design. You can email me on it's-a-me@arwalucky.com.
That's amazing. Thank you, Arwa. I'm so excited that you were on the podcast. You lived up to the hype in my brain because we only talked through LinkedIn message, and right away I was like, we're going to get along just fine. So I'm so excited that we got to meet over Zoom, and I know it's early in the morning for you, and I appreciate the fact that you did this. You're awesome. And yeah, we're going to do this again. Thank you so much.
This was really fun. Thanks a lot for reaching out to me.
Of course. Thank you for doing it. I appreciate it.